Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, Happy New Year. Y'all are so much better than first hour. I'm just gonna go ahead and give you that little gift. It is the new year. What was that? Too kind. Oh, you guys. I was very kind. Yes, I'm a New Year's Eve birthday boy. The whole world celebrates my birthday. It's pretty fantastic. Yeah. So, all right, it's the new year. Let me ask you, how many of you made New Year's resolutions? See you next week. That's apparently not many. This is not going to go well. Most humans, apparently no one in this room, for whatever reason, the beginning of the year is kind of a time to readjust and to rethink. And we always try to focus on ourselves. Most people at the beginning of New Year, and again, this is going to sound bad. I don't mean it to sound bad. But we all kind of focus on one thing. We focus on self-improvement, right? That's just kind of what we do at the beginning of a new year. And I'll be honest, in the church world, we love it. We love it because you all come back to church and you're all excited and we have high attendance and we're like, we're doing so great. And we're like, nope, it's just January. They all come back in January because they all thought, let's try it out, right? But we love it. Now, if you are a member of a gym, you hate January because all these strange new people come into your gym and they take your equipment and they stand there and talk. But don't worry, they'll be gone in a month. They will all be gone. But listen, this is the best part. They paid for a year. So, like, you need those people because they keep your fees down and they pay for the new equipment you want. So be really kind to them this month. By the end of, maybe even in 2 weeks, they'll be gone, right? And you won't see them again for a year. And next year they'll come back and he's like, hey, I remember you. And that'll be it, right? So it's completely okay. But normally what happens at this time of year is we all look around, we look at ourselves, and we all ask the same question. We ask, what should I do about me? How do I get slimmer? How do I get stronger? How do I get smarter? How do I get out of debt? What should I do about me? And every year we ask the question, and sometimes it works. Sometimes we ask these questions, and we make changes in ourselves, and it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. But the end result of the question, what should I do about me, is always the same, and it's always limited. The only person who ever improves when you ask that question is you. That's it. Please hear me. There's nothing wrong with getting in shape. There's nothing wrong with getting out of debt. But what we decided and what we want to do as a church this year is we wanted to begin 2016 asking a different question. A question that we would say is actually a better question. It's a bigger question. It's a broader question. And so starting today and for the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about this question. And I'm going to challenge you to ask a new question in 2016. Now, before we even get to the question, I'm going to go ahead and warn you. The question is much more difficult than what should I do about me. This question is going to require time. This question is going to require energy. This question is going to require focus. But the results of asking this question have far more reaching implications than you would ever have asking the question, what should I do about me? So, today we're going to kind of begin with the question, and then for the next 3 weeks, we're going to kind of unpack the question, and I'm going to bother some of you. Some of you are going to get really excited today. Others of you are going to get really frustrated today. You're going to be sad you brought your spouse today because they're going to leave all wild-eyed and all these great ideas. But don't worry, it's just week one. You're not supposed to do anything yet, okay? So we're all just going to calm down. But to help you understand why I would say this and why we would go this place at all, I want to talk to you about a guy. His name is Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was a leader in the Old Testament. Nehemiah was actually a guy who was a product of something called the Jewish exile. See, what had happened to the nation of Israel, the nation of Israel was God's chosen nation. God had chosen to move through them, to use them as an example, to proclaim to the world that following his ways were best. Our entire Old Testament, which is kind of the first two-thirds of our Bible, tells the story of God moving through the nation of Israel. Well, what had happened was in about 605 B.C., the nation of Israel, this mighty powerful nation, was conquered. It was defeated by a group called the Babylonians. And what the Babylonians would do is they would not only defeat you, they would then deport you back to Babylon. They would bring the leaders, they would bring the best and brightest. And so this Jewish exile had happened, and people had been brought back to Babylon. Well, fast forward about 70 years, and another mighty nation, the Persians, defeated the Babylonians. And their leader was a guy named Cyrus the Great. He basically came in and said, hey, look, if you're one of these people who the Babylonians took from their town, go back. You can go back home. It's fine now. So many of the Jewish people went back. Many of their leaders did not. Many of their leaders had made their new homes, and they stayed. And so things did not really go well as the nation of Israel returned back to their land and returned back to Jerusalem, right? So that had happened. 90 years later is where we meet this guy named Nehemiah. Nehemiah worked in the court of the king at the time, King Artaxerxes. And what Nehemiah did was Nehemiah had a journal. And so Nehemiah kind of wrote down this experience, and we have this entire experience, this entire journal that he wrote down, and that's the story we're going to look at today. And here's some of the unique things about the book of Nehemiah. There are no miracles in the book of Nehemiah. There are no miracles at all. God is present, but there are no miracles. It's a book about hard work. It's a book about determination. It's a book about vision. It's a book about following God's plan for your life, which makes it the absolutely perfect launching point for this series. So if you have your Bibles, you can open them to the book of Nehemiah. If not, it's going to be up on the screen, just like always. But I'm going to do something different. If you're a guest today, I don't ever do this, but today we're going to do it because it just kind of works in what we're going to do. I'm going to read you an entire chapter of the book of Nehemiah. I'm actually going to read you the very first chapter from the book of Nehemiah, basically the chapter of his journal. Because what we're going to discover in this first chapter is the very question, the better question that I hope we'll all ask in 2016. So if you have a Bible, you can join me turning to Nehemiah 1. If not, it's going to be up on the screen, just like always. And here's what Nehemiah says, starting in verse 1. He says, these are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. And I'll just go ahead and warn you, the history portion of the sermon is almost over. There will not be any tests, all right? But trust me, my wife assured me after last hour, you need to know this. So we're just going to go fast, okay? We're going to have a lot of names you've never heard before, a lot of word salad, but we'll get through it together. All right. These are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, in the late autumn, in the month of Kislev. We all know Kislev. In the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa. That's a lot of words. But the only reason I read that to you is to say, this is real. This really happened. These are his memoirs. It was late autumn in the month of Kislev, which was really a month, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign. Really a king. I was at the fortress of Susa. Really a place. These are markers. He's saying, this really happened to me. Here's what happened. Hannah and I, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some of the men who had just arrived from Judah. His brother and some men had just gone back to Judah. We don't believe Nehemiah had ever seen the nation of Israel. He had never seen it at all. But his brother had, and he just came back. And so I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the focus of the nation of Israel. That's where King David had established his palace. That is where King Solomon had built a temple. That is where the Jewish people would go to make sacrifices. Like, that was the center of their relationship with God. That's how they went and made themselves right with God. So Jerusalem was a very big deal. So he says, hey, tell me, how's it going in Jerusalem? Here's what they said. They said to me, things are not going well for those who returned to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. Now, we've had this happen before, right? Somebody's moved, they started a new business, they've gone, you haven't thought about them for years, you run into somebody, hey man, how's Bill doing? How's it going? And their face drops and they're like, not good, man. Not good. That's what's happening right now. He's getting devastating news. But that's not all. Look at this. The wall of Jerusalem, the very protection around the entire city, the wall of Jerusalem has been torn down. And the gates have been destroyed by fire. Nehemiah hears this news, and he has only one reaction. When I heard this, I sat down and wept. He's heartbroken. He hears this, hears this news, man. That can't be right. We have the same reaction when you're flipping through the channels and you see a news story, or you read something, or you hear some news, and it just unsettles you. It rattles you. But this was more for Nehemiah. This wasn't a deal where it unrattles you and then you flip the channel. Look what happened. I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned and fasted and prayed to the God of heaven. This bothered him for days. This news broke his heart. And he was troubled by it. He was troubled for days. And he didn't know what to do. So he did the only thing a man of God can do when he doesn't know what to do. He prayed. He said, God, I don't have any answers for this, but I'm going to turn to you. And because this is Nehemiah's journal, he actually recorded the prayer. Here's what he says. He says, then I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands. He's talking to God, and he's kind of reestablished, and he's saying, oh God, the one who keeps his covenant. See, a covenant was basically an agreement between God and people. God's covenant, his agreement with the nation of Israel, is different than his covenant with us today. His covenant with them was, if you obey me, I will bless you and good things will happen. If you disobey me, I will take my hands off of you and you will suffer the consequences of making bad mistakes. For the nation itself, it was, when you obey me as a nation, your nation will be powerful. When you disobey me as a nation, other nations will conquer you. That was their covenant. Now, pause. We live under a new covenant. We lived under a new agreement with God. Some of you need to hear that because you still think you can make God mad during the day. You cannot make God mad. Our new agreement is through his son Jesus, whom he punished for every mistake, not only will we've ever committed, but ever will commit. There's nothing you can do to make God mad at you ever. He got mad at Jesus for you. So the new agreement is that through Jesus, we can just have love and peace and guidance and never have to worry about God getting mad at us and punishing us. That's all gone. That all happened on the cross. So that's just some good news for you today. It has nothing to do with Nehemiah, but you needed to know. So, but the old covenant was, hey, when we obey you, good things happen. When we disobey, bad things happen. So he's praying to God. He's kind of trying to remind God of some things he said, which is always funny. Like he's God. I don't think he forgot. But he is. He's reminding God of some things he said. He says, he keeps the covenants of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands. Then he says this. He says, listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying night and day for your people, Israel. He's like, look, I want to talk to you about these people. I want to talk to you about what's going on here, okay? And the first thing he has to do is make an admission. This is what Nehemiah says in his prayer. He says, look, I confess that we've sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. He's like, look, I'm not pointing fingers here. We've all sinned. I've sinned. They've sinned. Yes, we've all sinned against you. We have sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, decrees, and regulations that you gave us through your servant Moses. He's like, look, we're getting what we deserve. I understand. But then he tries to turn the conversation. He tries to turn the prayer. And again, remind God, bring God back to something he had promised through Moses. Here's what he says. He says, please remember what you told your servant Moses. Again, God didn't forget. If you are unfaithful to me, I will scatter you among the nations. This is what had happened. They'd been unfaithful to God. They hadn't obeyed. They hadn't done what God wanted them to do. And he had scattered them. But then says this, but if you return to me and obey my commands and live by them, then even if you are exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I have chosen for my name to be honored. He's like, God, you knew this would happen. And you knew when we rebelled, you were going to send us, but you knew that if we ever turned back to you, you would bring us home. We're turning back. You've brought us home. You've brought some people home. It even says this, says, the people you rescued by your great power and strong hand are your servants. He's saying, God, these are people you rescued. These are people you rescued out of the nation of Egypt doing mighty things. Show me that mighty power again. Help me accomplish this next task. He says, oh, Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. He's saying, look, I'm not the only one praying for this. Here's what I want. Here's what I'm asking. God, here's what I need your help with. He says, please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. See, he's asking for favor with the king because Nehemiah is about to do something incredibly bold, some would call foolish. He's about to ask the king for a favor. You didn't ask the king for a favor. The king asked you for a favor. But he's about to go to the king and say, hey, king, here's what I need from you. I need you to give me an indefinite leave of absence. And then I also want you to provide me the materials and the funds to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall. That's what he's going to ask. And you may say, why was he going to ask that? Well, because the news of the desolation of Jerusalem broke his heart to the point where he felt compelled to act. And see, there's one thing you don't know. There's a piece he kind of left to the very end. Not only was he compelled to act, he was perfectly positioned to act. He was perfectly positioned to ask this question. Because almost as an aside, he adds this at the very end. He says, in those days, I was the king's cupbearer. In other words, I stood beside the king on a daily basis. I was a trusted advisor. He put his very life in my hands. So, Nehemiah had gotten news. That news had broken his heart. He had prayed to God. He had developed a plan to do something about it. And he was perfectly positioned to take a step to fix the problem. So, I believe today, for many of you, Nehemiah's story can be a picture of your story. And it's a picture of my story. And it's a picture of all our stories. If we simply choose to ask a better question in 2016, here's the better question. What breaks your heart? When you look around the city, when you look at your kids' schools, when you look at our state, when you look at our nation, when you look around your neighborhood, what breaks your heart? What's the thing that you know somebody has to do something about? It's wrong. It's broken. People are suffering. And you know beyond a shadow of a doubt, somebody should fix it. The only thing you're more sure of is that somebody's not you. Because you have a list this long of excuses. You're too old, you're too young, you're too busy. You don't have enough money, you don't have enough experience, you don't have enough time. It breaks your heart. It keeps you up sometimes. Sometimes you avoid the stories, you avoid the articles, you avoid the news, you avoid discussing it because it messes you up so much when people talk about it. So what if in 2016, what if instead of asking, what should I do about me? What if you asked, what should I do around me? What around me must change? What around me breaks my heart? And it's funny because this is really an intuitive question. It's an intuitive reality because on some level we all know a basic truth about life, and we always apply it to other people. We don't always apply it to ourselves, but we certainly hold other people to the standard. And we know it works, and here it is. Here's the truth. If you really want to become a better person, do something that makes the world a better place. We know this. Do you know how I know we know this? Because we don't write books. We don't build statues to people who are able to maintain their ideal weight. We don't write songs about people who were able to finally get out of debt. We don't do it. No, our heroes, the people that inspire us, the people that we want to emulate, the people we want to name our children after, are people who said, no, something is wrong. And because I'm here, the world, not just me, the world will become a better place. These are the people that we admire. The people who understood, if you really want to become a better person, do something that makes the world a better place. Now, let me go ahead and just predict the future for you. I'll go ahead and predict your 2016 if you choose not to embrace this question. If you choose not to embrace this idea of doing something around me rather than about me. Here's what I know. I know there are still things that break your heart. But here's what you're going to do in 2016. If you choose not to do anything about it, all you're going to do is blame. You're just going to blame other people. And let me let you in on a secret. You know this, but here's a secret. People who blame things don't change things. They don't do it. And I love to blame, and you love to blame, and we all love to blame. But here's what's going to happen this year. You're going to see something on the news, and you're going to see it, and it's going to break your heart. And rather than do something about it, you're going to start blaming people. And you're going to blame Obama, or you're going to blame Nikki Haley, or you're going to blame those idiots in Congress, or you're going to blame the HOA, or you're going to blame the city council, or you're going to blame your coach, or you're going to blame the principal, or you're going to blame. And some of you, because I've been in your homes, you'll literally pause the television and tell your kids, hey, kids, look to me. Let me explain to you why this is wrong. And then you blame. And what they're all thinking, but they won't say it unless they're teenagers. Teenagers sometimes get the guts to say things like this. Is they look you dead in the eye and say, if it bothers you so much, why don't you do something about it? What if we took all the energy we put into blaming and applied it to changing something? So again, I go back to the question. What breaks your heart? What is it? What breaks your heart? What bothers you? What do you know when you think about it? Somebody has to do something about this. And here's the great thing about this question. This question has nothing to do with religious affiliation. You can be here today and have no belief in God at all and still ask this question. You can still say, man, this bothers me. You know, you could be here today because somebody invited you. You don't believe in God. You don't believe in church. You're just here because somebody promised you lunch afterwards. And I encourage people to do that. So if they did that to you, make them buy. But you're here for that reason. It doesn't matter. You can ask this question. Now, if you are here today and you are a Christian, if you are here today and you actually count on Jesus Christ as your hope, and you believe that he paid the price for your mistakes, and that he healed the conflict between you and God, that he reconciled your relationship, and you believe that he is the leader of your life, and it is your calling to follow him and to obey him and to do everything in your power to become more like him, let me go ahead and help you. If that's the case, this isn't optional. It is impossible to follow and become like Jesus and do not make the world around you a better place. It just can't happen. Because Jesus modeled this while he was on earth. Jesus taught us that devotion to God is measured in devotion to others. What that means is how much you love God is shown by how much you love other people. That's Jesus' standard, not mine. He said, hey, if you love me, if you really want to show the world how much you love me, love other people. Help other people. Make other people's lives better. And this was modeled by Jesus. Everywhere he went, he left it better than he found it. He healed people. He provided for people. He gave them peace. He gave them hope. So as a Christian, we cannot live our lives simply asking, what should I do about me? We have to get beyond our own selfishness. We have to get beyond it. If we really want to follow Jesus, if he really wants to be the king and leader of our life, and begin asking the bigger and broader question of what should I do around me? And the question applies to everyone, because not only did Jesus teach that devotion to God is measured in devotion to others, Jesus also taught that people have inherent value, not ascribed value. What that means is people are valuable because they're people, not because you value them. It doesn't work, I'm a man and you're a woman, so I'm more valuable. It doesn't work, I'm rich and you're poor, so I'm more valuable. It doesn't work, I'm American and you're a foreigner, so I'm more valuable. No, Jesus says everyone has value. There is no pecking order. There is no us versus them. It's all us. People whom Jesus died for and longs to see reconciled to his dad. That's what Jesus taught. And I'm telling you, folks, when the church gets this right, it is a powerful thing. In the first and second centuries, the church got this right. They elevated the status of women and children. to a level that had never been seen in the known world. Because they refused to buy into the idea that I'm better than you simply because I'm a boy and you're a girl. Simply because I'm older and you're young, that I have more value. They said, no, that's not what Jesus said. Jesus said we all have value. Jesus said we all matter. And he said, we're going to prove to the world we love him by how we treat you. And we love him a lot because he gave everything. So we're going to treat you amazingly well. Some of the biggest social changes that have ever happened in our country, the abolitionist movement was rooted in Christian value, and the church pushed it forward. The civil rights movement was rooted in Christian value, and the church helped push it forward. When the church decides to build hospitals, not just for Christians, but for everybody. When the church decides to build orphanages, not just for Christians, but for everybody. When the church does these things, the world changes. The world becomes a better place. So, again, I ask you the question. What breaks your heart? Because here's the truth. If it breaks your heart, I bet it breaks God's heart. And what if the reason it breaks your heart is because it's been breaking God's heart for so long that he's ready to do something about it? And that the reason it breaks your heart instead of their heart is because you're the person God's picked to change it. That God wants to move through you to change the world around you. And what if God has had that in mind your entire life? And everything leading up to this moment has simply been preparing you to step into the struggles that break your heart. What if God's been planning it all along? Because see, here's what Nehemiah didn't know. Nehemiah didn't know that 70 years before God broke his heart, he had broken the heart of a man named Zerubbabel. It's really fun to say. Zerubbabel. He had broken the heart of a man named Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel had taken a group of people back to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And that 14 years prior to breaking Nehemiah's heart, God had broken the heart of a man named Ezra, who took a group of people back, not just to rebuild the temple, but to reteach the law and to reestablish the temple system and to reestablish the way the nation of Israel connected with their heavenly Father. And then through Nehemiah, God was going to send him back to rebuild the city and to rebuild the walls and get the city going again, all in preparation so that 444 years later, a carpenter could walk through the gates of the city, could walk into the temple that had been reestablished, and could proclaim himself the final prophet, priest, and king, and say, I am here to save the world because my Father loves you. It all prepared the way. It all went together. And they had no idea what God was up to. They had no idea what God was doing. They just knew that their hearts were broken. They just knew something had to be done about it. And they knew they were perfectly positioned to take the step. You have no idea what God can do through you. For some of you today, what I'm about to say is going to be a hard truth. It's going to scare some of you. For others of you, it's going to excite you so much you don't know what to do. Here's the good news. I get to walk off stage in just a minute. And it's between you and God what happens next. But I have to say this. You have to understand. You have no idea what hangs in the balance of your decision to embrace the burden that God has put on your heart. I know this. I know this because I say this with all humility and honesty. I'm a nobody. I try really hard to make it clear to you, I'm not better than you. I'm not special. I'm just a guy who had his heart broken. In the spring of 2008, God began to break my heart. And he began to break my wife's heart. about a place we've visited many times but never lived. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Myrtle, Vegas. And God began to break our heart. And we knew we had to do something. And so we moved here. And we made a lot of mistakes. But we knew what God wanted us to do. And today I get to stand up here in front of you, and I get to come to this place, and I get to see the pictures out on that wall, and I get to see all the faces of stories I know personally. I get to see the faces of people that God's allowed me to baptize personally, or allow our church to baptize, and I know the stories of the healed marriages, and I know the stories of the changed lives. And when I really want to cry a lot, I'll just ask myself, what if I had said no? I'm so glad I didn't. And again, this isn't to make me the hero. If God can do this through me, there is no telling what he can do through you. I mean that with all my heart. But you have no idea what hangs in the balance of your decision to embrace the burden God has put on your heart. You have no idea of the size and the scope of the impact the God of the universe wants to make through you. And I believe in 2016, it's all going to start with this question. What breaks your heart? What is it? What drives you crazy? What do you know somebody should do something about? What would happen this year if instead of asking, what should I do about me? If you decided to ask, what should I do around me? What happened? What breaks your heart? What keeps you up at night? Now, for some of you, I hate to say it, nothing breaks your heart right now. Well, yeah, some things break your heart, but you don't want to say them out loud. What breaks your heart is that your couch is 4 years old and you need a new one. What breaks your heart is that your car got a dent in it. Ask God to open your eyes to a world around you. What would happen if this year, all of us in this room, and everybody in first service, and everybody who's going to watch online, instead of saying, what should I do about me, begin to ask, what should I do around me? What would happen if we all embraced the truth that we all know? If you really want to become a better person, do something that makes the world a better place. What would happen? Now, I know for some of you, you're terrified right now because you're afraid your spouse is going to go home and quit their job. Like right now. And they're going to say, I told them to do it. I am not telling you to do that yet. This is a 3-week series. Let's get to the end. If you still want to quit your job, we'll talk about it. But let's not be impulsive. Because who knows? No. The end of this, some of you, yes, God may call you to quit your jobs. Others of you, God just simply wants you to volunteer one day a week. There are organizations already working on these things. But don't do anything hasty today, please. And if you do, don't email me about it. Because that's not what I believe you should do yet. This is a 3-week series. Today, I want you to just go home. I just want you to really think about what would happen if I started asking this better question. Start asking, what does break my heart? What does bother me? What are the things? And if nothing does, start looking around and asking God to open your eyes to places around you where he can move. So the way we're going to close today is we're going to sing a song. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes as I'm singing, God speaks to me and works things out in my soul that he doesn't while I'm just talking or preaching or listening to a bozo preach. The singing kind of brings it all home. And so So we're going to end today with a song, and I hope you'll sing it, and I hope you'll wrestle, and I hope you'll really decide in 2016 not to focus just on you. There's nothing wrong with getting in shape. There's nothing wrong with getting out of debt. There's nothing wrong with trying to be a nicer person. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But I think we can ask a better question this year. I think instead of worrying about what should I do about me, we can look around and say, what should I do around me? And it all comes down to one question. What breaks your heart?
Thanks again for listening to this week's Wellspring Church podcast. For more information, sermon downloads, and more, visit us at wellspringchurch.tv.